small enough to store in your glove box, so it's ideal backup for unexpected emergencies like blackouts, floods, or earthquakes. It's simply the best personal water filtration system available. So effective you can drink raw, untreated water from lakes, rivers, and streams. Unlike other sport bottles, the Sport Berkey's patented filter formulation is so powerful it removes cysts, parasites, harmful bacteria, and chemicals like herbicides and pesticides. It even reduces radon 222, lead, and other heavy metals. This lightweight, rugged 22-ounce filter is small enough to go everywhere, so take one to work and keep another in your glove box for emergencies. Get the Berkey Sport for only $39. Get two for $7.
Well, it's Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views. And for the next hour, they're going to be the views of Gary Barnett, and we're going to be talking about what is going on here financially in our country and really throughout the world. Gary, thank you very much for being with us.
Well, thank you for having me, Dr. Stan.
Why don't you just tell our listeners just a little bit about your background and in finance, and of course then we'll want to get your views of what's going on.
Well, I started in this business. First of all, I'm a registered principal and manager of an investment firm. It's my own firm. I've been in business for 22 years. I started with A.G. Edwards and Sons and was a vice president with them for about 11 years. After that, I decided to move to Montana, where I plan on staying forever, and opening up my own firm. I didn't want to be associated as an employee with a brokerage firm. And I've been doing that ever since. I'm now based in Lewistown, Montana, in the central part of the state. And, just for a brief overview about my financial business, that's pretty much it. I am libertarian-oriented, very much so, and I certainly study and believe in Austrian economics, so I am a free market person, so that's really helped me in my business also.
Well, of course, when you speak of Austrian economics, we're talking about the theories put forward by Ludwig von Mises, of course, who talked about the importance of the free enterprise system. Well, these are sort of tough times for people who are in the financial advisement community, because an awful lot of people have lost an awful lot of money for their investors.
to put it lightly, we're in a situation where mainstream reporting and the manipulation of the markets in the government, the monetary system, and the reporting the regulatory climate is just ridiculous. So, but people in the country, as a rule, and I'm just talking about just basic good American people, the economic ignorance is astounding to me, and it's getting worse. I mean, put much of the blame on the government public school system, but even the adults that should take the time to learn a little bit more about what's going on either don't have the tools to do it or don't care to take the time to do it or just really aren't afraid of it, don't have any concept of what actually happens.
Well, what could you explain to our listeners what did happen? How did we get them in the mess we are today? And where is this going to end up here in California? Why they're issuing IOUs? They're going to certainly Moody's and Standard & Poor's or either have or will lower the value of our bonds to junk bond status, which means it's going to cost a lot more to borrow money for our state. They're laying off large numbers of people and closing the parks and really beginning to shut down so many of the programs here. What's your interpretation? Why is this thing happening?
Well, I mean, it's the, you know, this country and this government has, when I speak of the government, I'm speaking inclusively of the government and the Federal Reserve, the Treasury, and Congress. I mean, we've been in a bubble economy for decades, our entire economic process is based on Keynesian economics.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan here. Our guest this afternoon is Gary Barnett, and he's from Montana. He's been in the investment business for 22 years or more. And he's, of course, a libertarian and, of course, is a financial advisor. Why, of course, he advises his people with these looking into the foundation of economics from the point of view of Ludwig von Mises, the Austrian economist, who talked about how the free enterprise system worked when you had a solid currency. And, of course, when you had a managed economy, it would always eventually collapse. And that's really what's happened today. We no longer have a free economy. We certainly don't have a stable monetary system. And the whole financial infrastructure of our nation was built into a great bubble, and that bubble has collapsed. And what they tell us, it's only a matter of time, Gary, before everything's going to be fine. We're just going to give a lot more money, pour a lot more money into the economy, lots more stimulus bills. We're going to save the homes. We're going to stop the foreclosures. People are going to get back working with all these new government projects. Isn't it wonderful?
I certainly think so, but I haven't received a bailout check just yet. So, but, you know, it's... This is a long, long-term problem. It's been building and building and building. And in this particular case, you know, my belief as far as going forward is that we're very likely, certainly very possible, to have an inflationary depression. And I don't know how, obviously, exactly how bad the inflation or the price inflation is going to get, but. The amount of money that's been produced, fiat money that's been produced, that actually doesn't exist, and the amount of debt that this country holds, I think 10 to 13 trillion dollars of new money produced for this particular bubble alone. It's not in the system yet, but you know, these things are unsustainable and they're totally destructive. And no economy can sustain, you know, what this country's doing. The government, what the government and the Fed have done here is put this country in a position where it's virtually impossible to recover without just letting the system fail on its own and go back to a free market structure. And that, in my opinion, that's just not going to happen. I think the inflation will continue.
But, of course, they have no intention of letting it collapse. They're going to keep putting more and more and more money in to try to get people buying again, try to get industry working again, try to get us consuming more and trying to prop up the whole world monetary system. We'll be back in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and our guest today is Gary Barnett. He's written some very interesting articles on the Internet, and it was for that reason I asked him to come onto our program to express his libertarian views that the only way that we are going to solve the problem we have is to let the whole system collapse and get back to a sound monetary base. But the Obama administration, the people, certainly Mr. Geithner, Mr. Summers, Paul Volcker, the people, of course, who control what's really going on, and remember that Barack Obama is simply a very articulate, a very charismatic figurehead for the power elite, which I think control him totally, put him in power, and maintaining him in power. But they seem to be intent upon just pouring more and more and more money out, and it's artificial money. They're even creating money out of nothing to buy up our debt. How can you do that?
Well, I mean, that's it can't continue. I mean, it has continued, like as I said before, for decades, and it was bubble after bubble. So you had, you know, you had these business cycles where you had recession and then a boom and then a bubble break, and this has continued on and on and on. But at some point, there's no way to sustain those false economies and those bubble economies. And we're, I think personally, that this particular situation we're in is not. I don't think there's any way that the Fed can buy their way out of this, even temporarily. I think you know, the temporary upswings that we're probably going to have are also going to be false. We have, still haven't recovered from the 2000. Tech bubble debacle, and if you go back in history, just not very far, each time we had a bubble, there was the indication that there was a full recovery. We had a several year period of growth and sustained growth, and of course everyone got euphoric, got back to spending and consuming, and then another bubble would come. But this time, we're at market levels that are at 10 or 12 year. That we were 10 or 12 years ago, and the recovery just it hasn't happened since the last major bubble. So what's happened is just expanded and expanded until now, and I think continued inflation from here would cause, if given that nothing changes, if it continues as it is, that there certainly will be an economic collapse.
Well, of course, right now, why we're not seeing prices going up, at least the government tells us here. We have very little inflation, certainly the prices of cars has come down, prices of homes has come down. Almost looks like we're having even a deflation rather than inflation. And, of course, they're just simply trying to put money in there to replace all the money that's been lost. And I don't know how much they put out. We know there were 700 a billion in TARP funds, and then 787 stimulus bills, something like that, and then almost $3.5 trillion of the budget for next year, and then they're talking about $1.8 trillion deficit for the year that ends in September, and then we hear other trillions of dollars that have just disappeared. Mr. Bernanke won't tell anybody what he's done with them, and we're just supposed to trust him. I mean, $2 trillion disappeared, and we're supposed to trust Ben Bernanke. We don't know whether he's got that in his stocking. He's given it to his friends. He just says that Congress, or really nobody, smart enough to understand what he's doing. It's got all to be done in secret because these are state secrets. I mean, are you concerned about the fact that Mr. Bernanke, the head of the Fed, won't tell Congress, won't tell the courts, won't tell anybody, even though he's been ordered by the courts to do it, won't tell anybody what's happened to $2 trillion?
Well, I mean, it's certainly ludicrous, but if you're asking if I'm surprised by it, no. I mean, the Federal Reserve should never have come into existence, and it should be abolished immediately. So, it's a destructor of our whole monetary system. Any central planning is going to be counterproductive to any economy. So, and as far, Ron Paul is doing wonderful work in trying to get the Fed audited. One of the comments I made yesterday is, I just don't expect. Although he's doing great work, and the best part of this is there's more and more talk of this, and more people are aware of the Federal Reserve secrecy and the corrupt nature of it, and this is going to help. But my belief is I can't put my arms around it. But I don't think the government's going to allow for the Federal Reserve to be completely undressed and exposed. If they did that, that would be a great thing, because I think we would have enough civil unrest and dissent, maybe to actually get something done. I would hope for that, but I'm a little pessimistic that it's actually going to happen.
Well, I don't think most people understand that the Federal Reserve is a privately owned central bank. Nobody knows who really owns the majority of the stock. It operates in secret. In fact, it was recently, just this last couple of last week or so, when Mr. Bernanke was interviewed in, before Congress by Congressman Duncan, who asked Mr. Bernanke what he thought about this effort to have Congress, or at least the General Accounting Office, audit the Fed. And I'm sure you're probably acquainted with Mr. Bernanke's remarks that if Congress was going to insist upon, you know, auditing the Fed and then in any way directing what it was doing or trying to remove, of course, its secrecy, it would lead to a financial collapse, a financial collapse of our economy. Incidentally, I tried to pull that down article down several times on the Internet, and every time I did, it crashed my computer. Now, you know, that could happen one time. But two times, three times in succession, I suppose I'm a little paranoid. But what do you think about Mr. Bernanke's remarks about if Congress should dare, you know, to try to challenge, you know, what they were doing, it could lead to a financial collapse?
I could only hope that it would. And I don't mean that in a sense that I would want the economy to collapse and stay collapsed. But what I think would happen if they were fully exposed is there would be mass demand for the Fed to be abolished or their power dramatically curtailed, and that would be a wonderful thing, you know, for all of us going forward. I think he'd be correct. I think if they exposed everything going on, the total corrupt nature of the Fed, and I have maybe a differing opinion. You know, as far as the Fed, I've never considered the Fed as private. I know it's a private company, and I know they have no oversight. But the Federal Reserve does as they're supposed to do as to what the executive and what Congress and what the Treasury Department wants them to do. It's just a conglomeration of a lot of government agencies working together. And the Federal Reserve, when the government asks for a higher debt limit and they want more money, the Fed prints it. Private or not, it's government collusion. As far as I'm concerned, there's more control there than most people think.
But who is controlling it? I mean, who is controlling Congress? Who is directing what's going on? Because this thing is not happening by accident. Certainly we know that J.P. Morgan Chase recently, in the last 10 days or so, has noticed it's going to start calling in a lot of its loans, cutting off loans to small businesses. Why, that in itself, by curtailing credit at this time, is exactly the opposite of what we're told. We're told we need more lending so that the industry can grow and business can grow. And J.P. Morgan Chase is going to do exactly the opposite. Why, this is what they've done time and again down to the last 100 years, contracting the economy and destroying the American economy. They've done it time and time again, and they're doing it today, and we're not even hearing about it.
Well, you know, I don't, as far as contracting the economy, they want the spending and they want the consumption so that they can have what would be a make-believe economy like we've been doing for years and years and years. You know, in reality, you've got unemployment that is escalating at dramatic rates, and it's a continuation. You've got a commercial real estate market and commercial loan portfolio market that's collapsing inside. And if you want to look at timelines back, well, just this past March, the government just eliminated the mark-to-market accounting rules so that banks could mark their bad paper back up, and immediately the banks started showing so-called profits and earnings growth. The scarier side of that for me, and I don't hear a whole lot mentioned about this, is the commercial markets in real estate, commercial loans, with all the unemployment and all the companies going out of business and the bankruptcy risk and the mortgage defaults and the consumption that's decreasing and the deflation is happening there and saving rates are going up. What hasn't been mentioned is these commercial real estate portfolios and loan portfolios, because of that mark-to-market accounting change, those are not going to get marked down as they're actually losing value. So they're still very, very much hidden on the books of these banks, financial institutions, mortgage companies, and other folks involved in this commercial market. And in my opinion, that is a huge problem going forward. I just don't know when it's going to be exposed, because it certainly isn't right now.
Well, what you're basically saying is that the banks are lying about their assets. They claim that they've got all this money, but that is because all their assets that they've been able to say they're worth whatever they say they're worth, whereas if they were actually to be put on the market, they might have lost 30, 40, 50, 60, 70% of their value. And the government is simply letting the major banks lie about their financial condition?
Well, it's not allowing them. They were the actual cause of this. I mean, they had a reason to eliminate the mark-to-market accounting. If a bank's sitting with a particular mortgage portfolio that they have priced at 40 cents on the dollar because no one will buy it for any more than that because it's the current actual value, and the mark-to-market accounting rule is eliminated, then they can just mark it right back up to par at 100. Well, you've got a problem right there. It's a complete lie as to what their assets actually are.
And I think really what we're seeing is a total make-believe world. We're seeing banks showing tremendous profits at J.P. Morgan. Goldman Sachs had a couple of billion-dollar profit. Well, how did they do it? They simply lied about their assets, and they got away with it. Well, Gary, what can the average person do? First of all, how can people survive in economic times like this with growing unemployment and growing home foreclosures and certainly more and more people finding that they've lost a large, significant part of their pensions and the value of many of the insurance companies, they're in real trouble. They're having to borrow money from the federal government so that they won't have negative equity. It looks to me like an awful lot of people are going to lose an awful lot of wealth before this is over.
Well, I mean, that's unfortunately that's true, and I would hope that more than I think were able to protect themselves, and due to the fact that I study history and politics and Austrian economics, and I understand the underlying elements and what's going on. I was able to see this coming as actually most Austrians saw coming back in 2006. And, and people that knew that there was trouble coming, would protect themselves, whether it's individuals or people like me that would protect their clients. But going forward, it's going to be even, tougher to do this, because if in fact some of these things that, to me seem very likely to happen. The price inflation, I think, is going to have to come. The inflation has actually already taken place. The money growth has escalated dramatically. It's unbelievable how much money's been produced. And this is continuing. And that just pretty much guarantees that we're going to have a price inflation down the road. In the interim, we have had deflationary times. We have savings rates that have gone way up from where they were, from a negative level up to about 5%, and that's a fantastic thing. The deflationary pricing is necessary. I mean, you need to allow. Think about a recession or a depression. Is the only thing that can fix a recession or a depression is a recession or a depression, as it goes. So you need to let things settle and price where they should be. But going forward, as I said, it's going to become much, much tougher, because if we do get into a higher interest rate economy, which I think will have to happen, and we do have an inflationary pricing, and we do have dollar collapse or dollar becoming weaker and weaker and weaker against other currencies, the job losses will continue. As far as protecting assets, at some point, I'm not saying that's today, but at some point, if these things happen, being into dollar-denominated assets is going to be very detrimental, to people's wealth. They're going to need help. People need to understand that these things are possible and be prepared, to protect themselves. And that's why there are a lot of folks that have advocated owning hard currencies, gold, silver, precious metals, and commodities and things. And that's important, very important. And the people that have done that, are sitting in a better position in case we do have, extreme times. And I think that, as I said, if everything that's happening now continues, I think there are going to be extreme times.
All right, fine. Well, of course, what sort of things did you get your clients into knowing this was going to happen? How did you protect your clients from the catastrophe that so many people experienced, you know, when the whole thing, the whole financial system really came apart here 6 months ago? Hold on, we'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Gary Barnett, and he is certainly a financial advisor, and I was just talking to him about what he did to try to protect his clients. He anticipated what was coming down the line. He understood the economics and that, you know, the good times do not go on forever. And it was very obvious that we're headed, the ship was headed for the rocky shoreline there at the end of last year. So how did you protect your clients at the time?
Well, it's been a very long process. Back in early 2006, I started talking to my clients about the impending situation. I felt very strongly that we were going to have a very, very steep recession at that time. I obviously didn't know exactly when it was going to happen. I could guess, and I wasn't that far off, but no one can get that exact. But I started talking to my clients very seriously about it in 2006 and started making shifts in my accounts, out of especially United States equity portfolios and that kind of thing. And I will say the first thing I did is I restructured my business at that time to a fee-based type business as opposed to a transactional type commission business. I called all my clients. I said, this is going to be necessary so that if we have to make extreme moves, we have to move money around a lot, we have to go from one thing to another, we have to shift the safety and back out, that the only way I can do that from a compliance standpoint and from a moral standpoint is to, you know, so it didn't cost you any additional money. And I said the volatility is going to become extreme, and the only way to combat that is to be able to move in a hurry get the safety. So the first thing I did was restructure my business, a fee-based business, which one of the best things I ever did for my clients. There's some luck involved in that. I'm not a genius or a guru, but we did get that done first, and then I started shifting assets out of U.S. equities, and I started moving into more commodity-driven and energy-driven portfolios and safe portfolios. Cash and CDs and short-term accounts, inflation-protected accounts, those kind of things, and hard assets, gold and also metals. And over time, I've kept most of the money of my clients, at least, split into what I consider conservative positions, and that varies depending on the account. And I'm probably right now only about 30% invested, and none of that is in U.S. equity, or most of it's either in the Eastern Bloc in Asia, or in commodities, or in safe assets, in currencies, several different currencies. And that's, you know, I think a pretty secure position going forward, because I can try to, not that I know what's going to happen, but I can try to stay very defensive and do things as is necessary to protect those accounts.
Well, because, you know, I think that the important thing at this time is not necessarily to make money, but just not to lose money. This is the tragedy that's befallen so many of the people who really were managing their own money and, of course, were investing in the stock market. And it was going up. And like, it was, the good times were here, and you just couldn't lose. I think there are an awful lot of people who felt that they were so smart that they could outsmart the market. And, of course, they came up with some terrible, terrible losses.
Well, horrible loss. I mean, they'd have to be a lot smarter than I am. And I've been doing this 22 years, to predict short-term markets. I don't know anyone that can do that. But you know, it's just a matter too of I mean, part of this is just common sense, but if you have an understanding of markets and the underlying elements, and knowing that there's manipulation and that there's bubbles that have been occurring, I mean, this didn't happen just all at once. This has been going on for a long time. And you know, and it's people investing for themselves and not having the knowledge to understand what's going on or be able to figure it out are going to get hurt. But in reality, most brokerage firms that manage money for clients across the country, at least from my research, did not understand what was happening, did not get their clients out, and you had losses totaling at one point, you know, 30% to 50% pretty much across the board. Well, that's devastating to anyone, but you know, when you're close to retirement or retired, you know, it's even more so. And you know, to recover from that, someone loses half their money, they have to double their money to get to even. And if you're in an inflationary environment like we are, that's not going to even get close to catching you up. So, and people that are 60, 70 years old or older just can't do it.
Well, I think that Richard Russell was right when he said, you know, he who loses the least is going to win in this environment, and that's really what it's about. Hold on, we'll be right back.
Yeah, okay.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and our guest is Gary Barnett. And Gary, of course, I was just commenting that Richard Russell had made the remark, well, he who loses the least is the one who lives, who wins in this environment. So an awful lot of people lost an awful lot of money because they did not see it coming, because the media did. And most stockbrokers were just saying how great everything was, that with the good times, we're here forever.
Well, I mean, the smartest investors in the whole world, all those folks at Goldman Sachs and Bear Stearns and AIG and even billionaire, successful billionaire investors like Warren Buffett, none of those folks saw it coming. They all had huge losses. So, you know, it was a very broad-based ignorance as far as I'm concerned. And, you know, and as far as salvaging capital, I mean, my first objective and first rule in this environment, and this goes back a few years, especially after the tech bubble in 2000, which I did fairly well in, but I didn't do as well as this time, and I learned some lessons. But, you know, my first rule is to protect capital at all costs. Making money in this environment is secondary, although I still attempt, without taking on much risk, to have...
Hold that thought. We'll be right back in just a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest is Gary Barnett. And Gary, would you like to get out your website, your telephone number, in case anybody would like to get in touch with you?
Well, I certainly will give you my telephone number, as I mentioned before to your producer. I don't have a website, and that is by design, at least at this time, and that's I am in the financial business, and we're regulated beyond imagination, and any website I do is monitored, and it has to be approved prior to going on, and it's kind of an exercise in futility for me, because I wouldn't want to be a little bit more open in what I say. I can be reached in my office at 406-535-5954 here in Lewistown, Montana. The name of my firm is Barnett Financial Services Incorporated. That's my personal corporation. And I'm just, I'm a full-service money manager, broker, and I manage money for people in about 21 states currently. No website, sorry.
All right, so that's all right. You don't have to apologize to me. And I really sort of sympathize with you of being under all the regulations you are. But then, of course, you've got people like Mr. Madoff, and no regulations at all, and obviously running a scam and having the SEC knew he was running a scam for years, and they did absolutely nothing. And 13,000 people, more or less, were just simply wiped out. Many of the very well-to-do people with millions of dollars, invested with Bernie because he was such a fine, upright man. Formerly the head of the NASDAQ, stock exchange, admired on Wall Street, consulted by the SEC, and they were the ones who just let him get away with ripping off all the people. And billions, something up to where it was $60-65 billion, have sort of evaporated. Well, anyway, of course, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 464-8295. And now, certainly, Gary, if you read the papers, they tell us that we see the green sprouts coming up. Things are really looking pretty good. When those green sprouts come up, that means we're on the way to recovery. Do you think we're on the way to recovery?
I think we're on the way to doom at this point with what's going on. I have refused to buy into any of this, and I've had only a handful, maybe two or three clients that have asked me, what I thought about going, what's going to happen going forward, because they pretty much know my thinking there. But this green shoot thing, I mean, it's really irritating, first of all, for someone in Bernanke's position to come up with little catchphrases, but it seemed to have caught on pretty well. But the underlying elements, the inflation, the unemployment, the foreclosures, continued foreclosures, commercial markets, the dollar destruction that will take place, all of these things are entrenched. They haven't changed. They've actually gotten worse. And the unemployment bothers me a lot, because you've got an unemployment rate at 9.5% according to the government, and I don't know if anyone's mentioned the manner in how they get these numbers, but the government now uses what's called a U3 calculation to judge unemployment, and it's completely false. It doesn't count near the real number of unemployed. Back during the Depression and well after, this country used what was called a U6 method, which actually counted most, not all, most of the unemployed. With the U3 method that the government uses now, and this is by design, they don't count anyone that hasn't applied in the last 4 weeks. They don't count people that have given up looking. Lots of folks don't get counted. And if you do the calculations or look at the U6 calculation now, unemployment is probably, real unemployment is between 17% and 18%. When you have that many people out of work and can't pay their bills and are defaulting on credit cards and on houses and on cars and on everything else, this is just, it's a compounding effect in the economy. It's just taking on more and more default, more debt, more bankruptcies. And this stuff snowballs, and it's going to get worse. And the government trying to fix it is inflating the money, which, again, will cause more harm to these same people down the road. And so that's why I don't like being a pessimist. I never have been. But in my mind, things have to get much worse from here.
Well, I certainly agree with this. I certainly agree with you. Our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And if you're out there waiting for things to turn around later this year, as you're being told by the media, why, of course, you are taking your action accordingly, why you're going to be in real trouble. I certainly agree that we are on the edge of a real precipice. We've got Dave calling in from Illinois. Hi, Dave. How are you doing?
Good afternoon, gentlemen. I have a quick comment to make about this wonderful economy we were talking about. In my view, there can be no recovery until they bring the factories back. Without manufacturing, we are toast. What's your guest think about that?
Well, our guest is saying that we are not going to recover until we get our manufacturing back. What are your thoughts on that, Gary?
Well, I certainly wouldn't disagree with that. I mean, what drives economies is production. Spending and consumption is what the government wants people to believe is going to get us out of this problem, and that's actually what got us into the problem. The only way to get out of this problem is to produce and manufacture, and that's not going to happen in a manipulated, regulated market. We're going to have a free market. There can be no bailouts. The government's going to have to quit spending money. Fed's going to have to quit inflating, and then people are forced to produce to sustain themselves, and then that's when the manufacturing base will increase, production will increase, and then you get into what I would call a real economy instead of a false economy. So your caller is exactly right, but it can't happen in an inflationary, government-controlled environment. That has to stop before the manufacturing is going to begin.
But the thing that really bothers me, David, is these crazy ideas of globalism that our leaders have. They're not going to tell the American people we're giving $50 billion, maybe $60 billion to General Motors. So that when they come out of the bankruptcy, they're going to be a smaller company. Why would we want to finance General Motors becoming a smaller company? Because they're shifting their production to the so-called BRIC nations, Brazil, Russia, India, and China, and we're financing them as they're building up their plants over there, and they're going to build cars over there and then bring them in here, and they're going to keep on closing their factories here. We have a big factory up in Milpitas, just north of where I live, and apparently that's going to be closing down. General Motors, Toyota, a combination. I think that we're going to see the continued shift of our manufacturing to other countries until this whole idea of globalism is gone. Anything else you'd like to say, David?
Yeah, just that in closing, just that until we get these criminals out of power, which may not happen, if we don't get these crooks out of power, Washington, at the state level too, we are done. I mean, we won't be the same nation before. It'll be done. It'll be over. No middle class. It'll be history.
Well, I hate to say it, but I agree with you totally, and I hope you're going to get those people there in Illinois educated, getting to listen to our programs and listen to people like Mr. Barnett. Thanks very much for calling. Okay, our telephone number again is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Now, as a libertarian, Gary, how do you feel about this effort to actively work to transfer American production to other countries so that we can have so-called free market?
Well, you know, the transfer of business overseas is done because it's the only way for it to be profitable. If you're in a free market, and when you don't have the cost and the government regulation, you don't have the protectionist environment, then people have to produce and they have to compete. If you have a fair competition, then, you know, the price will have to be, you have to please the consumer, and if you have to please the consumer, you have to do a good job. I don't have a problem, certainly with goods being produced anywhere else. I mean, if in my mind, if I can buy a good that's the same quality or better at a lower price, then I'm going to help not only myself, but I'm going to help my family. I'm going to help this country because I'm going to have more money to invest and save so that more production and more manufacturing bases can be built here through my investment. The problem I have with this whole system is that if government weren't involved in the first place, we wouldn't have companies leaving as fast as they are.
But of course, certainly the China has import quotas. I mean, you try to bring an American car into China, there's going to be a 25% tariff on that. Chinese cars come into America with no tariff. So we really don't have free trade. We have controlled trade, and it seems that the people in Washington, D.C. are giving people in the other countries tremendous advantage over our producers. That doesn't make any sense.
Well, it does, because government is using these other countries' capital to expand the money supply so they can stay in power. And, you know, this is not a global problem. This is a problem with our own government causing these problems. We certainly don't have free trade. You know, I wouldn't even hardly call it managed. I mean, it certainly is managed, but we haven't had free trade in this country in a long, long time. You know, and the protectionist mindset, you know, is one that just doesn't work for me. Now, regardless of what any other country does, in order for us to trade freely with every country on earth, and we have to eliminate trade restrictions, and the United States certainly has plenty of trade restrictions, those things have to be eliminated, and we have to be allowed to trade. When you're allowed to trade freely with everyone, besides the fact that it's going to be a very peaceable thing, it's going to bring more peace instead of more war. The more we trade with other countries, the better relationship we're going to have. If the government wasn't allowed to inflate the money supply and spend at will, they wouldn't be manipulating other countries or forcing other countries by threat to gain this. Gain the ability, you know, to continue the spending. China holds about $1 trillion or a little more of our debt, and if the government didn't have that, they would have to either print the money or inflate it, or they'd have to get it from somewhere else. And we're using these third world countries and countries like China and others to support a consumer society. My opinion is, if the government got out of the way completely, that would end very quickly.
Well, how can American workers, say here, you know, in the automotive industry, even at, say, $15 an hour, how could they, I mean, of course, they've been getting, as you know, up to $73 or $75 an hour when you take all the pensions and health care benefits of the retirees into account, but even how could our industries compete with China when we're paying $15 an hour? You know, when the Chinese worker worked for $3 or $4 a day, is there any way that we can outcompete them when, of course, they have a labor force that will work so cheaply?
Well, I mean, it's not that simple. The more production that comes to China, the more freedom that comes to China. You know, the more successful things become. You know, the Chinese people are going to want more things. They're going to want to buy more things. And they're going to want to make more money. You know, the wonderful thing about a struggling economy, you know, freedom is allowed. You know, those economies will not be third world economies. They won't be working for $2 an hour down the road. Someone else will have to take that position. And just the fact that somebody can work for $2 as opposed to starving to death might not be such a bad thing to some of those people. And as far as this country, as far as General Motors is concerned, they haven't worked for $15 an hour in decades. I mean, when you have unions and you have government manipulation and you have bailouts and you have mandated health care provisions, you know, they're paying their people anywhere from $60 or $70 to $110 an hour. There's no way they can compete with anybody. They shouldn't. They should be bankrupt.
You're absolutely right.
They were $65 billion in the hole last year and losing $2 billion a month. And they're getting bailed out, and they should actually go away. And
right.
Then someone could have, if bankruptcy had been allowed, someone else could have come in, could have purchased that company or parts of that company. They could have sold off parts. They could have continued to make automobiles without the interference of the union and the government, and they may have been successful in starting another company. It's not being allowed to happen. The government is going to control that, which is completely fascist. And they're going to control that industry and those companies.
And, of course, we are certainly subsidizing their transfer, their manufacturing overseas. So let's go to Laura, who's calling here. Laura's calling from Colorado. Laura, do you have a question for our guest?
No, I don't. I just have a comment. I fully agree with both of you gentlemen. I was a quality control inspector in manufacturing and was educated to do that through an aerospace school here in the United States that I might add was not cheap at all to go to school there. I was a single parent, not by my own choice. It just happened that way. And I decided that I wanted to have a good life. You know, just middle class. I wasn't asking for all that much, but I wanted to be able to at least have a two-bedroom house, you know, for my son and I. And within a short time after Clinton came into office, he signed NAFTA, and I observed manufacturing jobs leaving this country incrementally on and on to the point where within about 4 or 5 years of me having my education, I couldn't buy a job, even if I had the money to do so, in any kind of manufacturing, because all the jobs were going overseas. And I ended up waiting tables for $2 an hour for several years, plus tips, most of the time working 7 days a week at two different jobs, because I refused to go stand in line and ask the government for a penny. Meanwhile, I did not pay my student loans. As far as I was concerned, you know, the student loans were high, and if I couldn't get a job after going through what I did to get an education and better myself, I just decided that, you know what, I'm not paying those people. The government here that sold me out when Clinton signed NAFTA, they sold me out. They sold out a bunch of people. And so I couldn't have paid the loans if I had to while I was waiting tables. I could barely afford to pay rent.
All right,
I've never been a homeowner.
Oh, well, I certainly sympathize with your plight. Well, what would you say to Laura, Gary?
Well, probably not what she wants to hear. But, you know, I think a lot of people and want to blame different trade packages and things for this. But, you know, NAFTA is not a free trade agreement by any stretch. It's a monstrous document. And I don't think NAFTA is the reason that any jobs were lost. The taxation policies, the corporate taxation policies, the restrictions on business, the environmental laws, the unions, all these things that drive up the health care, all these things that drive up costs for companies, forces them either to go bankrupt and go out of business where nobody's going to have a job either, or move their business somewhere else where they can manufacture cheaper goods and sell them and continue to work.
Hold that thought. Well, I certainly agree with you, but I think that is the basis of American foreign policy is to drive our industry out of this country and elsewhere. But thanks very much for calling, Laura. I agree with you. We have a real problem because our industries are leaving this country, and this is the basis of American foreign policy. Bye-bye. Okay, fine. Well, you've got about a minute and a half or 2 minutes to wrap up the program. What message would you like to leave with our listeners out across America?
I think the only message that's worthwhile at this point, from my experience and background, what I do for a living, where I might give someone decent advice, is to do everything possible to protect what you have, and if that's going to entail saving money, stop spending, pay off debt, put yourself in a position to, if you do have additional money, that you're able to invest it somewhere or someone, you know, who will protect that capital for you or help you do that. And, you know, it's going to have to be a survivalist mode. Spending money and buying things, you know, is going to have to stop. The savings is going to have to continue. You know, jobs are going to continue to go away. So, you know, people have to realize that things aren't going to get better on their own, and they had better prepare themselves for hard times. And the people that are able to get rid of debt, able to lessen their spending, able to downsize when possible, able to be aware that they may lose a job and have a plan in place, I think that's the most important thing folks can do right now.
And I think everything has to be defensive, just try not to lose. I think that's the major thing. I think your point made earlier, preserve capital at all costs.
that's my objective.
All right, God. Well, I really appreciate you so much for being with us. And, of course, our guest has been Gary Barnett. And his contact number, if you'd like to know, 406-535-5954. That's 406-535-5954. Hey, so thanks very much for being with us. If anything comes up, why, give us a call. We'd always love to get you back on another program.
Thank you, Dr. Stan. I really appreciate it.
Bye-bye. Okay, fine. Well, I think that it's very important that people understand that we are in the middle of the worst financial crisis, not simply of my lifetime, and I'm 80 years old, but I think going back many centuries, and some of the smartest people I know, people smarter than I, are saying this is the worst financial crisis in the last 200 years. Bob Prechter of Elliott Wave says the worst crisis in 300 years. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and I hope you enjoyed our interview with Gary Barnett. And let me simply point out that you cannot understand anything that's going on today unless you understand the globalist agenda. The globalist agenda is laid out in the Earth Charter, which calls for equitable distribution of wealth within nations and between nations. And Laura Call from Colorado had worked very hard to get an education, and certainly shortly after she got the education, why, the job started leaving the country. But that is part of the plan. That's how you get equitable distribution of wealth between nations. And how do you know there's a plan? Why, you read the Earth Charter, which was written by David Rockefeller's nephew, Stephen Rockefeller. And, of course, you can get it on the Internet, or we'll be glad to send you a copy if you get something else for us. And understand that there is a master plan. The people who control our government hate the United States. They hate individual freedom. They really believe in a feudalistic society with a ruling elite, and what they're going to do is impoverish the American people, and they are intentionally creating this crisis. You need to go up to my website, radioliberty.com, and start reading my newsletters beginning with November of last year. That's radioliberty.com. Go to the letters, start November, December, January, February, March, April. I think we're up to the May newsletter is posted there now. You need to read them. You need to understand this is all determined ahead of time. They know what they're doing. They've crashed our economy, and they've done it intentionally. And who are they? They're the people who belong to the Brotherhood of Darkness. And if you haven't read my book, you need to get it. If you want to know who the people are, you need to get our syllabus, the membership list of the Brotherhood of Darkness. You can't understand anything going on until you understand that the people who surround Barack Obama all come from the Trilateral Commission. You need, of course, to get Patrick Wood's excellent DVD, which is the talk he gave last October here at our annual conference. It's called The Trilateral Commission, and that, of course, goes into the background of how these people control the government, how they created the financial collapse, how they have controlled every administration between 1976 and the year 2008. Every president and or vice president of the United States was a member of the Trilateral Commission, and the reason you've never heard that is because the media is controlled. And once you understand that, it all makes sense. Patrick does an excellent job in this DVD. It's called the Trilateral Commission. And then, of course, we have my talk on the financial Armageddon, which brings you up to date, shows you what they've done and why they want to destroy our economy. And when you understand that, it all makes sense. That's why we're giving all the money to General Motors, so they can come out of bankruptcy a smaller corporation. Well, if they're a smaller corporation, how are they going to provide more jobs? They're not. They're going to start producing more cars over in China and bring them in here so they can, of course, do away with our automotive industry. It's a long-range plan. If you've never heard our four-tape set, actually recorded in the early 1990s, interviews with Dr. Dunnigan, who in 1969 heard the plan about how they were going to be, again, building second-rate American cars and transfer the automotive industry to the Japanese. Now, the Japanese, of course, make excellent cars. They make them in American factories. with American workers, but it's done intentionally. They wanted to make second-rate American cars, but they can't let the American people understand what's going on. The four-tape set, The New Order of the Barbarians, we do have a transcript of that. You need to get that. You need to understand what's going on. Nothing is happening by accident. So let me suggest the book, Brotherhood of Darkness, the membership list of the Brotherhood of Darkness syllabus, the DVD entitled Trilateral Commission, and my talk on my DVD, the Trilateral Commission, and the syllabus that goes with that. Get the information, and there's so much more. Go to our website, RadioLiberty.com. You can listen to our internet programs, and of course, there, of course, it's 9 hours a day on the satellite, 4 hours live, MP3, blog, archived. And then please pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. Till Monday, may the Lord be with you.